This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Well, you can't call Carol today, but you can on Monday when she returns. I'm Mike Morn. Carol and Mike on Food for Thought, brought to you by Healthy Solutions Spice Blends. Just go to spiceblends.com. Also, Casey's Rib Shack, famous hickory smoked award-winning Southern Pit Barbecue. Carrie Lehman is in with me for the second hour of our show today. We're broadcasting it because you're going to hear a lot of noise, in case you're wondering. We are right on Elm Street on the beautiful bricked sidewalk in front of the Beacon Building at 814 Elm Street, which is where the Midtown Cafe lives and several other businesses. We're also kind of taking up a little space in front of Grohlin Communications. Carrie Lehman, you may know her restaurants. If you don't know her name, Waterworks Cafe in the Wombeck Mill, Bayona Cafe, Jefferson Mill. At Riverside Room is right next door to the Waterworks Cafe at the Wombeck. And Tidewater Catering, which is where I first heard of Carrie's work. That's been a business for about 12 years now, I think.
13.
13
oh
big
goodness,
years,
yes.
Huh? And from there came many other good things, and soon to come, Unity. And that will be over where Velcro is, off Sundial Ave, across the street from Elliott Urgent Care. So populating some of the areas that were restaurantless. I mean, obviously we have Cotton, you know, down in the Mill Yard, and that Jeff does his whole thing, but you've tapped into a working day schedule kind of a presentation with a combination of good food, good service, and just the right touch, and it's been a success for you.
Yeah, we've been real lucky. The culinary team members that I have pull out all the stops with some great creativity, keeping things affordable but healthy and light, and you know, I like to say entertaining. I mean, each cafe has its own personality, so True. You don't feel like you're walking in and out of you know, a chain situation where, quite frankly, it gets a little mundane or robotic. Yeah. So we really try to let each team showcase their own personalities.
I mean, it definitely has your stamp on it. If anybody knows you in terms of the decor, I mean, I know how much thought goes into it to blend in with not only the decor, you know, in your surrounding areas. You're on the river. I mean, so it's, that must be kind of the fun part of it.
It can be, yeah. You have to think outside the box, so to speak, because some of the things, the building speaks to you, sometimes the area speaks to you. And ironically, on a total funny side note, the woman that I work with on designing, she said to me a couple weeks ago, you know, I just want you to know, if you come up with another concept, I have a great idea. We're going to do like planets. I said, we are not doing planets. I said, I think we're going to push that envelope a little too far. But she was like, no, because I found these great light fixtures. I'm like, there'll be no planets.
Third rock from the sun, I can hear.
Right, yeah, no, that might be a little far-fetched. No.
Well, last Friday, we got a phone call, and I can't remember exactly what we were talking about, but Kevin from New Boston called, and we got, maybe it was hot peppers, or put the mic in his face, if you would, Mike.
Was it ghost peppers?
Yeah, it was talking about ghost peppers, and then we began talking, and you said that you raise peppers and sell to, I don't know, farms or canners or whatever.
We have a greenhouse, and we raise pepper plants and tomato plants and various heirloom variety plants, and we sell the plants.
Oh, okay, got it.
But as far as the vegetables, no, we don't. We normally end up doing what we're doing here.
Which is canning. Kevin is here with his wife, Cecile Lefebvre, from New Boston. And Cecile, welcome. You have put out a beautiful spread here. How many weeks is your canning season from when you start to when the last lid is screwed on?
The first big basket of tomatoes, which is normally the first week in August, to when I'm sick and tired of doing applesauce in October, is pretty much the length of my canning season.
So what is the favorite of all the things? I mean, I see peaches, I see applesauce, I see bread and butter pickles, I see red pepper jelly, and then you've got a
marinated
cooler
mushrooms down here.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even get to those.
Yeah,
you've got so
beautiful.
Many different things. The whole canning world, Kevin, is there's more to it than just, I mean, there's science behind it, and there's also, you got to be careful.
Yes, that is the first and foremost thing you should realize when you're canning. The philosophy is, if in doubt, throw it out, you know, because you don't want what can come out of something wrong. I'll be honest, the experts on the other side of the table here, my wife, I'm more or less the hands, you know, she asked me to do something, I'll do it, but you get the expertise as far as the canning procedures.
The mechanics of it and the science and everything. What got you?
I'm a sample taster.
All right. Well,
that's not a bad job.
As we all are, Carrie and I will join you on that. But here's the problem. I don't see any canned bacon.
I beg your pardon?
Yeah, canned bacon. It's a thing.
Oh, yeah. Actually, you can can bacon. I just haven't gotten to that yet.
For next year's interview, would you consider that?
Absolutely. And I'll even bring a jar so you can check it out.
Great. All right. So what is the key to canning and making it not only look good but taste really good? Is there a secret that you've discovered beside the basics that you have to employ?
Use the ripest and freshest and best vegetable or fruit that you have. And see through it from start to finish. It's, just doing whole tomatoes for me is a two-day process. So you just need to be diligent and keep it fresh and keep it at the right temperature. And
it sounds like it's a be patient with it. And
yeah, it is. You know, the first time I tried to can whole tomatoes, my canning jars were 3/4 full of fluid because I never let the tomatoes kind of rest in a colander in the refrigerator and get rid of all that extra juice. So it was a lesson learned. I just, stuck it in the blender when I needed to use it, and we had a little bit of watery tomato sauce at the time. But
Well, I know tomatoes can be tricky from what I've read, and don't you add lemon juice as well?
You add something acidic. Either you use a teaspoon or a tablespoon of white vinegar, or you can add lemon juice. There's so many different varieties of tomatoes out there now that you can't be assured as to the acidity of the tomato. They're breeding a lot of tomatoes with low acid for people that have a hard time digesting them with GERD and all that other stuff. So it's always best to, go to the side of caution. And I add about a teaspoon for each pint and a tablespoon for every quart of tomatoes, anything that I can.
All right. So there's two basic techniques in canning. Those are, and how do you know which of the two to use for what you're canning?
If it's acidic enough, you can use a water bath. And if it is non-acidic, then you use a pressure canner.
What does water bath mean?
A water bath is if you think of one of those big lobster pots, and it has a grid on the bottom so the jars don't touch the actual bottom when you're water bathing, and you bring that water to a boil, and you leave your canning items in that water for a minimum of 25 minutes. They have a can jar holder that you can actually take your canning jars out. You tighten your covers, and then you let them rest in a draft-free spot. You don't want a cold draft or your can's going to burst. Huh. And then you'll just hear the lids pop, and they're ready to go. Versus the pressure canner, which is a huge metal pot with a cover. You build up pressure in there. Once you put your canning jars in, you put water in, it builds up pressure. And it'll actually heat items in that pot to about 240 degrees, which is what you need to kill all the spores and all the botulism and whatever else
bacteria,
nasty
right.
things might be able to breed in something that's not acidic.
All right, so people should know that there's a difference between a pressure canner, and pressure cooker, correct?
Correct. Well, actually, you can do both.
You can use a standard pressure cooker, a Presto pusher, pressure cooker?
That's what I first used when I first started. The problem with a pressure cooker is you can't put as many cans in it
right.
as you do with a commercial
pressure
canner.
Yeah, you're restricted
canner.
In size, I would say. It's not as efficient.
Correct. So you're doing maybe 5 pints for every process, and it's a long process. You need to bring it up to pressure. You need to pressure. There's the ball canning jars have a book as well as to how long you're going to pressure cook something. It's usually a minimum of 75 minutes. And then you turn your heat off, and then you have to wait for it to cool. So it's not like you can do, 20 jars in an afternoon, because it's at least an hour and a half just to get it up to the point where it's safe, and it's another half hour for it to cool down before you can start all over again.
Now, Kevin, you had said that your job is the taste tester. So do you guys ever disagree on how if it's going to go forward to the table at some point?
Well, yeah. She'll taste everything with the exception of pickles. She is definitely not a pickle person.
I am not a pickle person.
But, and she's tried dills, various half sours, and let's just say not successful. But, you know, I give it a shot. And if I figure if I can't eat it, then it's probably not something we want to try too often.
If it just doesn't taste good, it goes to the chickens. But if it's spoiled, it goes in the compost pile. So it's not necessarily wasted. It's
right.
kind of turned into something else.
Reuse some other way. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, I think the interesting thing we had here, Mike, is she has two different kinds of resulting peaches, but she started with the same peach.
There's a very different color to them.
Right. And I'm going to let you finish, but you said one of them has honey from your own bees.
They're honeyed peaches. It's strictly honey, water, and fresh peaches. So I water bath the quart, which is a nice golden yellow, like you normally see peaches in this grocery store. And then I pressure canned a batch that came out almost orange, but their flavor is much more intense than the water bath peaches.
Now, when you have these at home, you have them for breakfast, you put them over ice cream.
You can, quite frankly, I'll tell you a secret. I can usually sit in front of the TV and eat a whole jar just in a sitting.
I would say
and wash it down with the juice when I'm done.
Well, the sad part is I would start with the pickles. You know, I would take the pickles. The pickles, I tried them. They're
really
delicious.
Really, really good in yogurt.
Oh, great idea.
And you can make a cobbler. So if you have people coming over and you don't know what to make for them, you can just empty one of these jars and stick the crumble crust, you know, the oats and the flour
right.
and the cinnamon and all that cobbler topping, and stick it in the oven and you have dessert.
Now, you said your purpose of this is to go several months without having to go to the grocery store. I found that
correct.
Really, really admirable. Because grocery store trips to me are, oh, goodness, sometimes.
Yeah. So, and that's why a couple of years ago I started canning meat in order to give that a try. And I actually surprised Kevin one evening with open-faced turkey sandwiches, and it wasn't until he was done that I said, so what you think? And he didn't croak and he didn't drop dead, and it happened to be the turkey that we had for New Year's Eve. He had fallen ill and we didn't have anybody coming over to the house, so I had a 20-pound turkey that I had to cook and nobody to eat it. So I canned it all and I gave it to him on March was the first jar that we opened.
Did you know?
No, I didn't know, and I'll tell you right now, you wouldn't know. The object of canning, it preserves that flavor that you're thinking of in the summer. Those of you that have bought tomatoes in the store in January know exactly what we're talking about when you taste a tomato in July and August. There's such a difference. And the canning preserves it. You know, canning's been around since they came out with glass jars, and they were probably using pottery before that.
Yeah, the Ball Company started in 1880, but I'm sure it was happening before that.
Oh, yeah, 1880.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as we know it today, and then it's evolved with different materials. The adhesion on the lid was rubber-based at one time. It's something else now, I think more of a poly something.
Yeah, yeah. So, and, you know, for people who don't have access to fresh tomatoes and that type of stuff, I actually buy a 6-pound can, which is the big industrial can of pizza sauce, and I recan it in half pint jars. So when we make our own pizzas, I don't have to waste the whole jar of sauce if we're only having one, because a half pint jar usually makes one, maybe one and a half pizzas.
Now, are you able to reuse? So let's say I take this pickle jar and eat all these pickles. Now you pop the lid right in front of us. Is that reusable, or is the
lid is not reusable?
The lid is not reusable.
The rim cover is the part that holds the lid on.
Gotcha.
Is, and the jar is, as long as there aren't any nicks or cracks in the jar.
But the flat part,
but the actual flat part is not. But they do make one. There's a company out there called Tattler, who has plastic covers with a small rubber gasket. And you can actually reuse those.
And the reason it can't be reused, I'm guessing, is that seal has been popped and broken. Is that really
correct?
Right?
It's imprinted already in the, if you look at the rubber on a new canning jar, there's not a rib on it. Whereas once you've canned it, it's made the impression. So you can't justify the seal again once it's
so
been,
it's compromised, I understand.
Compressed.
Wow, great, great.
Wow. So you mentioned food, and I see that you have moose burger in there as well. Now, I mean, what I'm reading online is that, you know, basically 1-year shelf life, you know, is probably preferred. However, I noticed that some of your stuff is a little older than that. The applesauce is from 2012, so that's 3 years old. You don't find any deterioration in the flavor or quality of the
I just tasted it, and it was, it was outstanding.
I mean, it's the most beautiful looking applesauce I've ever seen. It's got a very rich color. You can actually see the apple fibers. It's not just completely mush, which is nice.
It's actually, it's chunky for a reason, because I was tired of having having all the saucy type of stuff. And when we started the applesauce, it was strictly to give it away as gifts. So we had gone strawberry picking in June and had frozen strawberries up the wazoo. So I said, well, let's make a blend. So I actually make four different kinds of applesauce. We do cranberry applesauce, blueberry applesauce, strawberry applesauce, plain brown sugar cinnamon, most with honey as opposed to sugar.
The strawberry applesauce, by far and away, is the best.
I was going to bring some, but Kevin ate them all.
Oh. Kevin!
Is that what that empty jar is? You ate it in the car on the way down. Oh, that's great.
So, this is great.
So it sounds like you're having a lot of fun with it. You're repurposing food. This moose burger is fascinating.
Yeah, that's supper tonight.
Did you go moose hunting?
Kevin did.
Ah, so this is a full circle.
Oh, yeah. I got my moose in 2014. And it was a 815-pound bull with a 48-inch spread, you know.
Hi, not
Scott.
That he's,
Scott Tenney's
you know.
Out there, my hunting partner.
Wow, that is fantastic. Fantastic.
Do you enter any of this in any of the fairs? Because clearly you're very good at it, and it's appealing looking and tastes great.
I never make the deadlines.
Something to aspire to. You never know.
Yeah, you know, when I'm semi-retired.
There you go.
And I have
there
all that
go.
Free time.
There you go.
In the afternoon.
Well, this is certainly a craft that takes patience and time, and clearly you're knowledgeable about it, and you care greatly about it. So.
Yep.
But anybody could try this. I mean, the instructions are online. If you talk to your elderly parents or grandparents, you might know someone that does it. Learn the craft, because there's nothing more satisfying than, you know, middle of winter, going down and grabbing a jar of applesauce or grabbing peaches that you picked during the summer. And, you know, you're not paying store-bought prices for something very plain tasting.
All right, what's it going to cost to get me started? How much money am I going to need to spend on materials? And I'm going to say that the fruit is growing in my yard, so just the materials.
So let's say you don't have a pot at all. Let's say $40 between the pot and the jar holder and all the little stuff that you need.
Water bath.
Because the can, if you're going to pressure can, then that's a $250 investment right there. And can jars. And you can get those for a variety of prices. All depends on where you want to shop.
You buy yours online or you go to a local?
Oh, no. We go, can I say names of who? Yeah. Okay. Big Lots has some right now for like $11 on the quarts and $8, I think, on the pints, which is reasonable. You can get them at Walmart. Hardware stores have them as well.
Ask them for Christmas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She said earlier she asked for the jars for Christmas, which
I thought was great. And my mother-in-law is kind enough to at least give me a couple cases every Christmas. So.
Well, she knows she's going to get something back in them, too.
You know, you hand them out, but you never get the jars back.
Right. Right. Well, I have to say, my boyfriend's mother lives up in Sunapee, and she does jarring and canning. And I do have a special affection for her salsa. And every time he'll go to visit, I'm like, please make sure you bring back the salsa. And my promise to her is always I return the jars.
Best way to get more is return empty jars, saying, look, they're all empty. What can you do about it?
She actually was nice enough one year. I love apricot preserves. And she made apricot and put little stickers that said Kerry's apricot preserves. So she's been quite good to me.
Well, you can find a lot of stuff online. I'm glad you mentioned that. I just went to freshpreserving.com, which is the official website of the Ball and Kerr Company. And they have all kinds of videos you can watch, but I'm sure that there are many, many places to go to at least put your eyes on it to get a sense of what Cecile and Kevin have been telling us about. So, but who taught you? Your mom?
No, actually, I was self-taught.
Good girl.
My mother made a lot of applesauce to make pies during the holidays, but the whole canning thing was pretty much just my own trying to get Christmas through without spending $200 on stuff that people would never use again. So,
well, I have seen, given in my catering business, I see a lot of folks come up with creative favors as gifts. And I've seen people do applesauce, maple syrup, honey, and even, I know it's not in a food item, but bath salts,
right.
Sugar bath salts. And these are becoming more and more, and I even say to brides who are stuck, you know, I said food item favors are very, very, very popular. And especially if it's handmade, I mean, what a more warming thing, I mean, instead of giving out a votive candle. So right. I've seen more and more of this happen.
Yeah, we have a friend who actually got married last June, or when did Derek get married? The year before.
Yeah.
And he actually asked us for honey for the tables. So.
And, you know, one other thing, you know, you were talking about how, what it takes to do it, cleanliness. Because, you know, what you can only get as good as you start with. And if you start with, you know, unclean jars or a sloppy, dirty area, you're going to end up with something that's probably not the best for you.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Cleanliness,
well,
absolutely.
Well,
I put mine
in
the dishwasher.
Before we let you go, because we're just about out of time, I want to hear a little bit more about your bees. How big is your colony, or how extensive is the work it takes to manage them?
Well, we now have 4 big colonies and 4 nukes, which are 5-frame nukes. In this last batch of weather that we had and this humidity, we've pretty much left them alone. So we'll be going in this weekend once the weather's nicer. Our hives, I guess, are pretty much status quo for everybody else that's around here. So.
Yeah, I have, Cecile got into it again, starting with the greenhouse, wanted to get bees to help and this and that, and I decided, again, I'm the hands. Well, now I'm the one that's caught on it, and I have a kind of a maybe unrealistic goal, but I want to get to like 50 hives in 3 years.
Cecile, if you could see on TV, just went, oh, like their face, like, oh, no.
Do you have the full beekeeper get up and everything?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And you use it. I mean, but it's like anything else. It's learning your animals, learning your stocks.
They are livestock. They are. We do consider them livestock, and we purposely don't mow the lawn and ask people to, you know, keep the goldenrod up a little bit longer because they really are kind of stretched for forage. So a lot of people keep their lawns far too neat and trim, and there's nothing for them to eat. So this time of year, our yard looks pretty messy. So.
All the excuse I needed to hear. You know, that along with colony collapse disorder, which I know has been a real worldwide problem with bees. And if the bees are gone, we're dead. Our food supply
is hugely
compromised.
Keep canning.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, and if I could interject real quick, I did hear a stat, and maybe you can tell me if I'm right or wrong, that if you eat honey from your area, from New Hampshire, you're more apt to be able to fend off flus and things rather than, let's say, getting honey from Brazil, you know, when you can buy in the store. I've heard that it has natural immune boosting because the bees are in our area. I'd heard that a few weeks ago.
Hmm.
It's local honey is considered anything 100 miles from where you live contains pollen, and that's from the surrounding area, especially if you have allergies. So if you have allergies and you want to reduce your reaction to them, then
you start
small with a teaspoon a day and continue that way for a while, and you'll find that your reactions to allergies will lessen. And there's a difference between spring and fall honey. So if you have fall allergies, you're looking for fall local honey. If you have spring allergies, you're looking for spring honey.
And it has to be raw honey. If you get the pasteurized, you know, not to pick on the names of the department stores and whatnot, but they've been heated. Once you heat it above 120 degrees, you start losing all the good stuff that's in it. They try to kill all the bad stuff, but they're also killing everything that's good.
Got it.
Great advice.
Well, Kevin and Cecile Lefebvre from New Boston, it all began with conversation about ghost peppers and led to their appearance today. They brought down a beautiful display, and we've been sampling them. So thank you so much, because you went to a lot of trouble to bring some of your samples down, and you gave us good information. And I don't think we could have picked anybody better to represent
your
activity.
Both.
Well, thank you very much for having us. It was fun.
And anytime.
Thank you. We appreciate that. We're going to take a break, come back, and wrap up the show. We've got a couple more segments to go. It's 132, the Pulse 107.7, WTPL's Food for Thought.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7, the Pulse.
got caught trying to sample some applesauce here. Along with the other canning delights brought by the Lefebvres of New Boston today as they pack up. Although, they're going to leave some stuff for us behind, Carrie.
The pickles are mine.
So the pickles are yours. Yeah. Well, we can arm wrestle over the rest of them. But you're probably
well, you are the lead host, sir. You take what you want.
Well, I know, but you're my guest. So and you, in the world of hospitality, I have to show you the same courtesy, I think.
A true gentleman.
So, but I will steer you away from the applesauce.
I love it.
Oh, my goodness. This is Food for Thought 107.7 WTPL, a service of Mama McDonough's Irish Pub on Depot Street in Hillsborough. Come find your Irish side. We're also brought to you by Integrity Health Coaching Solutions of Bedford and Londonderry, and very soon coming to North Conway, New Hampshire. A couple of things in the world of food going on in our area, just worth mentioning once again. Greek Fest is happening this weekend, actually tomorrow and Sunday at Assumption Greek Orthodox Church. I've not been to that.
Oh, my goodness. What a day of fun that can be. Yeah, don't go with a full stomach.
No,
you go hungry.
Very good idea. The Raw Bar has returned to Hanover Street Chop House. Steve Clutter tells me that's basically, well, I don't know if I'm quoting correctly, kind of a loss leader.
I was there last Tuesday.
At a dollar an item. Oh, were you? So you know what?
I pulled in. You know what? I was a little caught off guard. I pulled in, but thankfully Steve Clutter was out in the parking lot.
Yes.
And I saw him, and he said, no, I'm not making this up. He said, the bar is a mob scene.
Yeah.
Now, it's Tuesday at 5:45, and it was like my one night I didn't have something to do. So my boyfriend and I walk in. There was a waiting list for the bar.
Yes.
I mean, who does that? But what a great evening. The oysters were firm. There was some PEI. There were Blue Point.
Oh, wow.
It was outstanding. And then, of course, we saddled up for a great steak. It was a great night. Great night.
Yeah, I love Hanover Street Chop House. The Foundry is going to partner with the Farmer's Dinner October 11th. That's, you know, another month and a half away. But details are being worked out. The Foundry Facebook page will tell you more about that. LaBelle Winery, which is just a wonderful facility that we have in our area, has a class Cooking with Grapes as part of their winemaker's kitchen cooking series. Attendees, you will prepare grape cake, roast chicken with grapes, and tuna steaks with capers and grape salsa. That is happening September 16th from 6 to 7:30 at only $25 a person. Whenever you get a cooking class or instruction and you get to keep the food, $25 I think is a steal.
That is a steal.
And you know, the ambiance there is wonderful, and we had Amy LaBelle out here, actually, one of the more recent times that you co-hosted with me.
And I get a chance to drive by there once in a while, and I'm really delighted to see how many people are out on her bistro patio, and so they seem to be really hitting their stride out there.
They are indeed. So here's a couple interesting things from the world of food, and I wanted to get your feedback, being that you are a restaurateur. Is the end in sight for the American Institution of Tipping? The New York Times reports that as several cities begin to implement minimum wage increases, an expanding number of restaurants are experimenting with no tipping policies as a way to manage rising labor costs. Well, what are you hearing amongst your friends on that?
Well, yeah, this is, excuse me, definitely going to become a source of contention. I don't know that it would hit so much New Hampshire as hard as it may some of these bigger cities, but there's no doubt that, you know, profit margins in restaurants, as we all know, are limited. And if we need to have to pay staff more to keep the quality staff, you know, how do you offset that? And still expect to be able to, you know, kind of keep what you're doing. You know, it's funny. I actually am criticized quite often because I don't have tip jars out in my cafes, and I've had people say to me, "We want to tip your staff. We want to tip your staff." And it's not like they're not permitted to accept the tip. We just don't solicit it. And I'm sure you've even seen this in Dunkin' Donuts and things of that nature. So it can be a very touchy thing. But there's no doubt rising costs of health insurance, workers' comp. It's all coming into play. It really does come into play.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering because your restaurants, I was just going to point out, aren't really tip geared or the type of service. Although somebody does bring your plate to your table, and I have to admit, sometimes I've totally forgotten that I probably should. I mean, I do like to tip when I can or give a gratuity. I don't always do that, you know, when I'm at your restaurant.
Yeah, I don't think, I honestly, if I had to poll my staff, I don't think that they expect it. I think it's always certainly appreciated, but given what they have to do, it is part of their regular job description, and their pay reflects what they're doing. But again, it could be an extraordinary situation to elderly folk or someone with a baby, and they go out, you know, above and beyond to do something. And that's always nice when people recognize that.
So for some restaurants that perhaps will be instituting no tipping, that is probably going to find its way worked into the tab somehow, which in a way does keep the servers from getting stiffed. But I don't know how many.
Well, I think you may like find that. Yourself with a service charge, you know, when, you know, in some of these large group policies where they'll say groups of over 12 will, you know, put in the 18% or whatever it
yes.
is. So, yeah, right, right.
And when that happens, sometimes people don't notice, and they still leave another tip, which I'm sure makes
the servers
happy,
yes.
right?
Yeah,
because they
you know,
still
we
get
really,
that percentage, right?
Well, well, what's funny is you're really supposed to disclose that, because as a patron, if the next day you get your credit card bill and you realize you double paid, you technically are justified to get that back. Yeah, it really is. I know there's a little bit of buyer beware, but I think out of courtesy, most restaurateurs that I know feel that's kind of a distasteful cheat if you're not making people aware of it.
You a coffee person?
I'm a tea person.
Oh, that's right. In fact, one of your employees delivered some tea, and I think it was the tea you were telling me about earlier that you discovered
Chicago.
In Chicago.
Well, it's nice to know, you know, we got people out there listening to us, right? And
so
I got tea delivered on the street.
And just on his own? He brought it over
to
well,
you? You know, I was...
Is he up for a raise now?
I don't know. That's what I'm wondering. When's his next review? So.
Well, he had a smile on his face. He brought a couple of...
He knows where to butter the bread, I guess. Yeah.
He's probably management material if he's thinking along those lines. Well, the reason I ask if you are a fan of coffee is a website I was on today lists the coffee capitals of each state.
The coffee, okay.
And the way they determine it is by the number of coffee places per 10,000 people.
Okay, so it's a geographic, okay.
It's a geographical, and what they did is they went state by state. And New Hampshire has a town that ranks number 7 in the country in coffee places, 10,000 people. And I did actually guess before I looked it up what it was.
Can I try to guess?
All
right, so I'm going to say it's either Portsmouth or Nashua.
One of those is correct. You have to pick one.
Portsmouth.
Correct.
Yes.
I was thinking either Portsmouth or Keene or maybe even Lebanon, you know, college towns.
That probably would have been a closer guess.
But
yeah,
Portsmouth is absolutely correct. Now, how many coffee places would you guess Portsmouth has? Remember, this is 7th in the country of all communities. How many per 10,000 people? Now, there's 20,000 people, 21,000 people in Portsmouth.
I'm gonna stab a guess at 11.
Not bad. Considering that that's such a wide open number, there are 18.8 coffee places per 10,000,
really?
Which would make, what, about 35 in the city? And I'm sure that includes Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts,
Honeydew,
and all those places.
Right, I was trying in my head kind of do something, right, but that's extraordinary.
Yeah, so they're well caffeinated.
They're very awake in Portsmouth.
They are, exactly.
Very awake.
And which state has the number one places per 10,000 coffee places in the country?
It has to be Seattle.
Well, you would think that. I mean, I didn't even think about the Starbucks aspect of it. And before I saw it, I thought, well, it's probably a northern city. You know, even though iced coffee is very popular. The number one coffee place in this country, Tyson's Corner, Virginia.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, they also have a population of 21,000, like Portsmouth, which has 18.8 coffee places per 10,000. Tyson's Corner has 30.1 coffee places per 10,000. That would be 60
Corner,
in the city.
I say all this, I'm not well traveled, and I've been to Tyson's
You're
Corner.
You're lying to us.
Yeah, this is really backing me against the wall here. But no, Tyson's Corner is an interesting spot because there's...
D.C. Metro,
it
right?
It is exactly what that. And there are, you want to talk about some great steakhouses and restaurants and things of that nature down there. But a lot of people will stay there and go into D.C. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of almost a suburban hub right outside the mecca of politics. So that's pretty interesting.
Yes. Hmm. All right. We have to take one more break. We'll come back and wrap up with our Food for Thought segment today, Friday. Carrie Lehman filling in for Carol Lawrence, who returns on Monday. I'm Mike Moore, and it is 1247, 1077 WTPL. The Pulse. Back to wrap up after these.
for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
All right, we're in the waning moments of Food for Thought, broadcasting live street level today, our special event Friday, as we've done, weather permitting, for much of the summer months. And we, for the most part, had pretty good weather. We went downstairs last week into the studio because there was rain all around us. Turns out we didn't really get much here in Manchester that day, but got to be safe, I guess. And the weather has been fantastic. It looks good for the weekend. Thanks to Carrie Lehman for sitting in today for Carol. One final thought here, because we sort of talked about this earlier. Somebody was asked online, what drives you crazy about sandwiches? This person said, I hate that tomatoes are often standard on sandwiches, meaning they get piled on in the winter and spring when tomatoes aren't very good. They should only be included during the summer and early fall when tomatoes are in season and taste wonderful. Find another garnish that's better suited for the colder months. Does that ring at all with your experience that sometimes your tomatoes just aren't very good?
You know, there's no doubt they, you know, but I think also as a restaurateur, you rely on your vendors. Certainly in December, I'm not going to get Jersey tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, they may not be as super ripe, but, you know, you slice them a little thinner. You really can't use the closer to the ends. They're not as ripe as they are in the middle. So maybe there's a little more waste. But I really don't find that we alter that very much. I mean, on the catering side, I try to sell perhaps salads, you know, that might be something a little more seasonal. Maybe we add dried cranberries and dried cherries and try to get away from trying to put strawberries and blueberries in salads. So there's some accommodation there. But the sandwich thing, that's a tough call.
Kind of interesting, though. You know, just hearing what the public wants probably doesn't surprise you most of the time, but you still have to keep your antenna up because, you know, if you hear something over and over again, you know that the public is onto something.
Oh, without a doubt. And, you know, trending is hugely important. And as I said earlier, just because something might be hot in Denver, you know, it takes a little while to get here. Conversely, you know, people are very price sensitive here too. I mean, you know, you might like to have, you know, fresh vegetables and asparagus year round, but, you know, are you willing to pay the extra to have that? You know, I'm a big proponent on, I really want the food to be fresh. And so if I find myself in a situation where I can't get the product in, I would rather make an amendment to the menu and say, this isn't available right now because we're not happy with the quality. I will say, that being said, my vendors have been fabulous. And, you know, perhaps we pay a little more for the produce and things of that nature, but I'm very happy with the response I get. And, you know, we have a vendor who drives in from Boston every day. We use some of the local guys here, you know, for heirloom tomatoes and such. But the product we've gotten has been very consistently good. But that's vendor relations. You gotta take care of them and they'll take care of you.
Yeah, just being familiar with your restaurants, I think people expect to see the nicer looking, the fresher, the better tasting produce than you might find at another
breads
place.
Are the same way. I think it's breads are a big deal. People don't like the, you know, bagels. We were having this conversation with our vendor the other day that I don't like the very doughy. We're almost eating a bagel is like a sandwich. That's not what I like. I like them, you know, forgive me, more Brooklyn bagel style. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, it's and if you haven't had a Brooklyn bagel, you know, it's more of a crunchy experience, and that's really the way it should be.
Carrie Lehman, our co-host today, Tidewater Catering Group, began in 2003, and now she's got Waterworks Cafe in the Wambeck Mill over on Commercial Street, Bayonne Bay, about a half mile away in the Jefferson Mill. So do you do a lot of roller skating? Or
yeah, I do a lot of bebopping around. Thankfully, it is all on one street, and oftentimes I'll ask one of the guys if they're going out to do a delivery, let me hop in the van and I'll get a ride one way and walk the other way back. But I try to get around to all the sites. I really, if nothing else, not to go in and inspect, but to go in and thank not just my team, but the customers.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big nut to crack, this industry. And you got to you have to be humble. You have to stay grateful. I say this all the time. Oh, that's a beautiful Manchester fire.
How many
truck.
Fires have we got
yeah,
to put out
these
in the
guys
city
are,
today?
Well, maybe they're, oh boy, yeah, this is exciting. But yeah, you got to stay on top of it.
Well, Carrie Lehman, we will look for the opening of Unity sometime in October. If I don't talk to you before then, it's been just such a treat to have you as co-host today and the other couple times this summer.
And thank you. This has been beautiful out here. Beautiful day in Manchester.
And we got to have some fabulous canning samples as well. So life is good. And one of your people brought you tea.
It's been a good day for us.
All right. Have a great weekend. Enjoy your company outing. I'm Mike Morin, back with Carol on Monday. Food for thought. Thanks to Bob Lippman, our producer today at the studio in Bokan. Kale and Company is next. 107.7 WTPL. We'll see you Monday. Bye.